So as we conclude our series today in the book of Galatians, I'm a little sad to conclude it because I've enjoyed teaching you what's in the book of Galatians. But as we conclude today, we're going to talk about this idea of how I deal with discouragement in my life. So let me ask you this question. How many of you all have ever faced major discouragement in your life? Just raise your hand. Major, oh gosh, you're all here. I mean, gosh, that's amazing. And so I'm in the right place. You're in the right place. And I want to start with a second question, and that is this. What is the loneliest moment of your life? I want you to think for a minute about the loneliest moment in your life. Where would that be, and how would you define that? And I bet it was when what you thought would make you happy let you down. What you thought, you had an expectation of God or somebody else, and I think somehow, some way, it let you down. You thought God was going to do something, and he didn't. You thought somebody else was going to do something, and they didn't. And then you find yourself dealing then with this concept of discouragement. And I want to start with a concept, and I want you to hear me loud and clear in this. I want you to hear my heart in this matter, is that you have to learn to encourage yourself, because the truth is, if you're depending upon somebody else to encourage you, it may or may not happen. So over the last 30-some years of ministry, 35 years of ministry, I'm telling you, honestly, what I've had to learn to do is I've had to learn to the truths that would drive me to the point of encouragement. I've had to learn to encourage myself. And so what I want to give you today is some of the things on this journey that I've learned, some truths that you can put into your life, start practicing right now today, that will help you in the battle. And maybe some of you are here even right now, and you're discouraged. I hope that before you leave today, that your discouragement will have lifted a bit, and that you'll have some hope as you walk out the door today, knowing that God has a plan for you. He's given you some tools to work with. So there is an old dead guy by the name of Martin Luther. And Martin Luther is just amazing. He was an amazing man of faith and belief. And once he was so depressed over a prolonged period of time that his wife walked down the stairs one day dressed in all black. And he said, "Who died?" And she said, "God has died." And he said, "God has not died." And she said, "Then why don't you just live like that? God is not dead. Why don't you just live like that?" No one is immune to depression, discouragement. Nobody is immune. And there's another man that knew something about discouragement. He was a man by the name of David, the king of Israel. So let me tell you his story a little bit. This is a fascinating story. David had been anointed as king by Samuel, the famous prophet in the Old Testament. And, you know, so we have this David who, he's defeated Goliath. Can you imagine that day when David defeated Goliath and all of Israel was now released from the bondage of the Philistines? And it was an amazing day in the history of David's life and in the life of Israel itself. Everything David touched turned to gold. Everything he did turned out right. People were writing songs about him and singing songs about him. He was destined to the throne. But there was one small problem. Saul, the current king over Israel, had a pathological jealousy of him. Saul just hated David and tried to kill him on several occasions. And so David began to run. He ran to a neighboring king who eventually David began to feel threatened by, originally took him in, so David acted like he was crazy. David was afraid for his life, so he began to act like he was crazy. He let spittle run down in his beard. He scratched the gates of the city doors, and eventually he ran, and he found himself in a cave. Now, here's David. He's lost everything. He's lost his fame. He's lost his fortune. He's lost his wife. He's lost his reputation, and now he's lost all of his friends, so he's alone in this cave, and it's a very discouraging time for David. But here's what you need to know about caves. Caves are where God does his best work in you. Caves are a place. This cave for us is symbolic. Obviously, I hope you don't go hide in the cave this afternoon. It's my hope for you today. That would not be good. And somebody asks you, "Why are you here? Pastor Dan said I should go get in the cave." No, I'm not saying that at all. But here's what I know about caves, spiritually speaking. Caves are where God does his greatest work in our lives. It's where all the crutches and all the things that we depend on are removed. And so now we just have to deal with God one-on-one. We have to deal with God in a clear and present way. And I'm just saying, it is an amazing thing. A cave is where you end up when life doesn't turn out the way you think it's going to. Anybody like that? Where you look in the mirror and you go, what in the world happened? I don't know. I'm just dizzy over what just happened. And you're just thinking, I wouldn't have ever expected that. And then there's these things called blindsides in our life. You know, we just get blindsided by something and we're going, what was that? And we find ourselves in a cave without any props, without anything we can depend upon, except now we're face to face with God himself. So what I want to deal with today is you're all going to be in a cave someday. You all understand that? I hope you are. I hope you get put to the point in your life where all the props are taken out of your life, and now you have to figure out what you're going to do with God, and now you're going to go to a new level with God. I hope that happens. So what I want to talk to you today is that when you get into that cave, how do you avoid a cave-in? How do you just not let that experience be totally bad in your life and destructive in your life? So for that to happen, I'm going to tell you what I've learned in the last 35 years as I've walked with God, and I've been in the caves many times with God. What I've learned that there are about 7 truths that if I am going to be in the cave, I've got to learn. If I'm going to get my way out of discouragement, I have to put truth into my life. And so what I want to share with you for just a few minutes is 7 simple but profound and unbelievably good things that if you started practicing today, that it would make a major difference in your life in the level of discouragement you have going on a regular basis. And when you get to that place where you're blindsided, now you have some tools to work yourself out of that. Is that a deal? So here we go. I would lean into this a little bit. This is really good stuff. I think truth number one is this. If I'm going to learn how to combat discouragement in my own life, I have to, first of all, talk to God honestly. I have to talk to God honestly. David wrote Psalm 142 while in the cave that I just described. His cave was literal and physical, and he writes this amazing song in the middle of this discouraging time in his life, and he says this, I cry out to the Lord, I plead for the Lord's mercy, I pour out my complaints. You'll see that language in David's life regularly. I pour out my complaints before him and tell him all of my troubles. So David had no problem coming before the living God, and this is what it's called. Psalm 142 is called what is called a psalm of lament. And you'll see that David wrote a lot of the psalms, and a lot of the psalms that he wrote were called psalms of lament. And they always had an ingredient in them. There was always an honesty. There was a moment of truth about what was going on. And so oftentimes, David would say to God, God, I'm hurting, I'm desperate, and you don't care. And you've let this happen in my life. David says that to the living God. David doesn't hold back anything. It may not be true, but it was David's understanding of what was true. So from David's side of the screen, from David's side of the story, he looked at his life and says, God, where in the world are you? Now, David understood that this was the all-encompassing, amazing, reverent God. This was the God who spoke creation. This is the God who brought the nation of Israel out of bondage. He understood all of that, and yet David had no problem in a cave saying to God, this is where I'm at, God. And I'm telling you, you can't move forward until you do that. And it needs to be a verbal thing. You need to say it out loud. Because if you don't, you'll risk turning it inward, and once it goes inward, it becomes poison. And once poison takes place inside of your life, it will be something that is disastrous for you. So you've got to speak to God in truth. God is a big enough God. He's not going to zap you with lightning. He's not going to make you, you know, toast. He's not going to make any of those things. He's going to hear your complaint. He's going to answer. And by the way, as David writes through these psalms, he eventually gets to the other side of his complaint, and he realizes and recognizes God for who he really is, and he sees that God's a delivering God, and he always acknowledges that too. But this is where David starts, and David starts with the idea. David starts with the idea, I'm hurting God, and it seems like you don't care. In my own personal life, I have a journal. I journal regularly, and I oftentimes will say, I'll write in my journal, things like what David just said. God, what's going on here? This is your promise. I don't see you fulfilling it. And God is not offended at me in any way, shape, or form in that. He understands I'm frail. He understands that you're frail. And so this needs to become a discipline in your life where you not only speak it out loud, but perhaps you start writing some of these things out, because what will happen if you don't is disastrous. That's truth number one. I have to speak to God honestly and sincerely, not harshly, not in anger, not in any of those emotions. I have to just say the truth to God. The second thing that I have to do, second tool, second truth that I'm going to give to you today, is that you must resist anger and bitterness. You must resist anger and bitterness. Once that takes on, if you don't do step number one, you'll turn inward. And once you turn inward, it'll be like a poison that flows out of you, and everybody around you will be contaminated by it. And it is something that is, it is disastrous when you let that happen. So you have to resist it. James chapter 1, verse 12 says this: God blesses those who patiently endure testing and temptation. Patiently endure testing and temptation. Afterward, they will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. So God says to you and I that life is going to knock us down, and we have to do all that we can to just get back up and face life again and resist the temptation. There will be a temptation in your life. And I know, I'm just going to tell you, speak honestly, I know people who start well and finish horribly. I see them all the time. And one of the major reasons they start well and finish horribly is because they let bitterness and anger take hold in their life, because either God disappointed them or somebody let them down. So you have to resist that by coming to God, acknowledging it to God, and then waiting patiently for God to act. So let me see if I can help you, you know, kind of take this home for your life. So you all know who Emmett Smith is, right? Most of you who are football fans would know Emmett Smith. Emmett Smith is the current world record holder for the NFL career rushing yards, a title he took away from the previous record holder, Walter Payton. And of course, this was over a 15-year career. Smith ran the ball for an incredible 18,355 yards. And if you do the math on that, what that equates to is that is 14 miles. Emmett Smith ran the ball in the NFL for 14 miles. And every time he got the ball, the opponents would shove him, push him, jump on him, roll over him, and their goal was these great big linebackers and linemen in the NFL, their goal with Emmett Smith was to take him and crush his body to the ground and hurt him to the point where he wouldn't get up, because if he doesn't get up, he can't run anymore. Y'all understand that? And then once he's on the ground, they're going to say things about his mama. They're going to say things about it every time that happens. They're going to say things about his mama. I'm not saying that's right. I'm not endorsing that. I'm just telling you what happens, okay? And we're just going to be realistic. So he gets knocked down, and so he would average about 4.16 yards per carry. He carried over 4,400 times, and it was an amazing journey for him. But here's the reality. Every time he got knocked down, he got back up. There are, you know, a few exceptions where he ran out of bounds or he scored that touchdown or something like that happened. But for the most part, probably 98% of the time in those carries, he got knocked down, punished for what he did. They just handed him the ball, and all of a sudden he's got these enemies that want to kill him and crush him. And now you think about life. Isn't that kind of familiar to you and I as we think about how we go through life? There are people that hate us. There are people that would like us to, you know, to give up. There are people that would like us to deny our faith. There are people all around us that just simply don't want the best in our life or for us to succeed. And I'm just saying, in life there will be hurdles, obstacles that you and I have to, life is going to knock you down. And what you do when you get knocked down is going to determine whether or not you're going to get back up and whether you're going to finish the race that God has for you. So I'm saying to you, you have to resist bitterness. You've got to recognize, and Emmett Smith would just jump up. He would smile at his opponents. I mean, that drives your enemies crazy when you smile at him. smile at them and get back in the huddle. And that's how you and I are supposed to do it. Now, I'm going to just tell you, listen to me carefully. If you're young, you're thinking probably, you know, Pastor Dan, this haven't happened to me yet. I'm going to say, give it a few more years. And I'm going to tell you this. I'm just trying to be positive with you. You're going to get knocked down. You're going to get betrayed by friends. And you're going to get stabbed in the back by enemies. And you're going to have blind sides. You're going to have disappointments. You're going to have illnesses. You're going to have all sorts of things. You're going to have financial setbacks. You're going to have loss in your life. And what you do with that is going to determine whether or not you're going to run this race and get the reward that God has at the end of the race for you. So to do that, you have to not look at the circumstance of being knocked down. You've got to look at God. And as you look at God, you've got to figure out that what I'm going to do with all my heart is that I'm going to resist. I'm going to resist getting bitter every time I get knocked down. I'm going to resist that anger. And I'm just going to use that to fuel me to get back up and to serve my God. That makes sense to you? So principle number two, or truth number two, is that you've got to resist bitterness and anger. Number three is that, and this is so true, is that how do I finish well? How do I stop being discouraged? I need to recognize that every circumstance passes. Everyone. All my circumstances have a beginning and an end. Even death. Even if I'm beginning the last stages of my life, and maybe I get a bad diagnosis, and the doctor says I have 6 months to live. My friend, listen carefully. That is a temporary circumstance that will pass. You will pass to the next life. Everything in life, including facing your own death, is temporary. It passes. Solomon, one of the wisest men, the wisest person in the world, says there is a time to cry and a time to laugh. Why did he say that? Because he knew that life circumstances change. So maybe you're in a mourning season. Understand this right now. Maybe you're in a crying season. Understand this right now. Don't miss this. Is that whatever I'm going through right now has a beginning and an end. It's seasonal. And that is so important for me to understand, because when I'm in the midst of it, when I'm in the midst of a bad season in my life, it feels like every minute is an eternity. When I'm in a bad way, when I'm discouraged, it feels like life is in slow-mo. You know, and I'm just walking through life very slowly. And then I go to Disneyland, and it feels like I just check in the gate and it's time to go home. What is up with that? I mean, that just passes so quickly. But when I am in the difficult trenches, it feels like it's forever and ever for it to pass. Just know this, your life circumstances, whatever they are temporary. Truth number four is that you have to learn to find refuge in God. Remember Psalm 142 that I talked about earlier, about what David wrote in the cave? Let me remind you of that. And then he writes this. He says, I say, you are my... He says to God, God, I'm just complaining. Here's my complaint. And then he says to God, you are my place of refuge. You are all I really want in life. David, after he lays his complaint out to God, now says, God, you are my refuge. So what does it mean that God is our refuge? Well, let me see if I can tell you from a life story what it meant for me, or what it means to me. When I was in high school, you all know that I'm mouthy, right? I mean, you can see that on stage. Hope you can see that. I'm feisty. I just, whatever comes in the head sometimes just goes out the mouth. But in all of high school, from ninth grade to the time I was a senior in high school, I never got in one fist fight. And this was pretty miraculous when you think about how mouthy I was, because I was mouthy. But there was a secret to it. My best friend was 6'5", and he was a shot putter and a discus thrower, and he was an all-state discus thrower and shot putter, and he went on to throw the shot put at Division I college sports. So here he was, we were best friends. We went, spent all of our time together. When we were in high school, we were always together, and I would just walk through and the seas would part, you know what I mean? And I'm thinking I'm pretty darn good. And in back of me was this huge, strong, amazing guy that nobody would ever want to mess with. And I'm sure he'd never got in a fist fight in all of his life, because who would be that stupid to do that? Now, I just want to say to you, I have a new best friend. My new best friend is the creator of the universe, so don't mess with me. And he literally, amen, amen, that's great, isn't it? And he literally parts the sea when he chooses to. He has the power to do that, and that's my best friend. That's my friend, and he declares that I'm his friend. So that's what it means to be in this refuge, is that God begins to fight your battles. You are hidden in the shadow of his wings. You are under his care. That's what it means to take refuge in the living God. David had enemies, and he said, I can't fight these enemies. God, you're going to have to do it for me. And it was pretty amazing. Truth number five, and this is going to be a hard one for you, discipline your mind. Peter, in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13 says, so prepare your minds for action and exercise self-control. Prepare your minds for action and then practice self-control. So I want to just take a moment and say, I think everyone would agree that I need to prepare my mind, right? How many would disagree with that? Would anybody here disagree with the fact that I should prepare my mind so that when I get to that point of discouragement, I'm going to have a tool to use in that moment of discouragement? But again, there's a gap between what I believe and what I acknowledge and actually what I practice. So let me ask you this. How many of you don't have to raise your hand, let's just all feel guilty together. How many of you all memorize scripture regularly? Because that's how you put truth into your life. Because I don't have the luxury, maybe you do, I don't carry my Bible everywhere. And so I've got to be, and sometimes blindsides come at unpredictable times. That's the definition of a blindside. And so the truth is that if I haven't prepared for that moment, I'm going to get devastated. So how do I get out of that? I take truth and I put it into my mind in a way that I can remember it so that in the moment of my crisis, I have something to draw from. I have an anchor to put my foot on. So let me ask you this question. I've said this to you many times. You ought to be speaking out loud the gospel of Jesus every day to yourself. But how many actually practice that? How many actually practice that? Of out loud speaking the gospel message that at my weakest moment, Christ died for me, that I am worth God's son to God. He paid the price for me. He sent his son to die for me. And I've been made, I'm an heir of all of his promises. I've been adopted into his family. The truth is that I've been born into his family. I've been adopted. Both of those concepts sit side by side in the scripture. And the truth is that God takes ownership of me. And yet, and the book of James says, listen to this. James says, what I confess with my mouth sets the direction of my life. That's what James says, the brother of Jesus, says, what I confess with my mouth sets the direction of my life. So there is this gap between what we believe, and it's easy to sit in church and say, yeah, that's right, Pastor Dan, and it's another thing to get up a half hour early so that I have the opportunity to have some quiet time before God so that I might find truth in my life. Do you get that? I mean, every one of us should be squirming just a shade in our seat because I'm talking to you, not the person sitting next to you. I'm talking to you. And this is so darn important for you to understand that if you're gonna work your way out of discouragement, then you have to have the tools to do it. And if you have never taken the time to take the truth and set it in your heart, then you are going to get wiped out when it comes down your way. So just take a moment right now and say to God, God, I'm so sorry that you've given me a tool to use that I have left untouched. I'm not speaking the truth out loud, and I'm not taking the word and hiding it in my heart that I might not sin against you. So you with me on that? How are we doing so far? I mean, is this good stuff? You all right with this? I want to help you. I'm not here to make you feel bad. I just want to say, here are the tools that God gives to us. Here's what God has provided so that you and I don't have to walk in discouragement. And it's so powerful when you understand the power of disciplining your mind. A pastor was walking through the streets of Hong Kong, and he came upon a tattoo salon, And in the window there was a display of sample tattoos, and one that stood out was these words, "Born to Lose." And this pastor had the same thought I had when I read this. Who in the world, who in their right mind would put a sign on their body permanently that says, "Born to Lose"? I mean, does that make any sense to you at all? If it does, we probably need to talk afterwards, because that is just weird if you think you're born to lose. And so this made this pastor curious, and so he went into the studio and he asked the person, "Does anybody ever get that tattoo?" And the tattoo artist said, "Yes." And he said this in broken English, "Before tattooed on body, tattooed on mind." So that's just the expression of what's been tattooed on your mind. So if you erase that tattoo that you're born to lose, and you put a new tattoo in your mind of born to win, born to serve, born to get victory, born to understand God, to be in relationship with God, when you put that new tattoo on your soul, my friend, it makes all the difference in the world. Truth number six is that deep friendships are essential. Now you say, "Wait a second, Pastor Dan, you just said that I've got to work my own way out of you know, this discouragement." And the answer is yes. And one of those ways is to find the right friends. And I know that this is hard for many of you in the audience, because some of you are introverts and you know, you're not good at making, you know, really, you know, you're not good at being outgoing and you know, really establishing friendships. But the truth is deep friendships are essential. Deep friendships are essential if I'm going to find my way out of discouragement. Proverbs 17:17 says, "A friend is always loyal, a brother is born to help in time of need." And you need to understand that I know some of you, you know, are struggling to find friends, and maybe some of you have more friends than you need. I'm just simply saying, you don't need 30, you just need one or two. Deep friends are just that. They're deep friends, they're not shallow friends, and so you only have time in your life for one or two deep friends. Who are they in your life? And, you know, don't hide behind your personality. Don't hide behind the fact that, you know, I don't have any friends. I'm just simply saying you got to step out of that and trust God and begin to pray and ask God. I mean, listen to me carefully. My wife is an introvert. I get introverts. I love introverts. But truth is that you can't hide behind it. You have to step out and ask the Lord, provide that deep friendship inside of my life. And then when you find them, share them with me, because I don't have any. But I just thought I'd say that. So there's a contest, a prize offered for the best definition of a friend. And so there are many of these definitions. One was one who understands our silence. That's great. One who multiplies joys and divides griefs. That's a great one. Multiplies joys and you know, divides griefs. And the one that won was this: the one who comes in when the whole world has gone out. That's a friend. When you've sinned and everybody knows it, you know your friends by the people that are moving away from you versus towards you. Great friends, deep friends move towards you in your sin, not away. So that's what you're looking for. You're praying for it. And then lastly, truth number seven is today, you are one day closer to your victory. Do you believe that? Today, you are one day closer to your victory. And that is so hard to understand in the midst of your sadness, the midst of your discouragement or depression or whatever you're going through. So today you're one day closer to victory. Never lose sight of that. Never lose sight of the fact that today, right now, it may not be tomorrow, it may not be the next day, but today you are one day closer. That's what I know for sure. You're one day closer to your victory. David Brainerd wrote this amazing journal, and in it he says, and I'll explain who David Brainerd is in just a minute. Maybe some of you know him. I would be surprised if many of you know who he was. But David Brainerd wrote this in his journal. He says, "My heart is sunk. It seemed to me I should never have any success among the American Indians. My soul was weary of my life. I longed for death beyond measure." He wrote in his journal, "I wish God would just kill me. I just would rather die." David Brainerd was a missionary in the early 1700s to Native Americans in the New England area. deeply discouraged by lack of converts. He was on the field for 3 years, serving, preaching the gospel faithfully, being in relationship with these Native Americans, and he didn't have one convert. 3 years into his work, he finally witnessed a revival, actually an amazing revival. He stayed faithful, even though he wrote that in his journal. Remember, he's being honest with God. I despair of life. He says he despaired of life because he thought his life's work was meaningless. And so 3 years into that, he had this revival that broke out among the natives, and they saw 150 Native Americans come to Christ. Now, that may not sound a lot to you. I mean, at an Easter service here at Grace, oftentimes we have those kind of converts. But in that age, in that day, without social media, without large churches, without, you know, just one-on-one relationships, 150 converts was amazing. And for the next couple of years, he continued to reap the harvest there. And unfortunately, Brainerd died after only 5 years on the mission field at the age of 29. But don't feel sorry for him. After David Brainerd's death, Jonathan Edwards, anybody heard of Jonathan Edwards? Jonathan Edwards, whom some consider to be America's greatest theologian of all time, published Brainerd's journals, published them. He had an international audience through his writings, and these were read widely in America and Europe. And in fact, there was a guy by the name of William Carey, who was considered to be the father of missions in the world, in the Protestant world, read David Brainerd's journal, and it was his inspiration to start his mission. And then what happened after that is out of his ministry came million through his ministry even to this day. And by the way, you and I are sitting in this auditorium because of William Carey's work and the amount of salvations that took place. It's like this web where millions of people came to Christ. Millions and millions came to Christ. And so I want to say again, David Brainerd, had he given up one day before the revival, would have missed all of that. This is so important for you to hear. You are one day closer to victory in your life. Who then can judge whether our work is worthwhile? We certainly can in the midst of it. Certainly we can't figure out whether we're being effective or not. Only God can. But the truth is that you're not the judge of whether you should stop or not. Only God is. So what I want you to do is, this is how we're going to conclude our time together. I want you to all stand if you can. And I'm going to say a statement, and then you're going to say it after me, and then we're going to say it one more time. Okay? Are you ready for this? This is me alone, only my voice right now. This is what we're going to say together in just a minute. Today, I am one day closer to victory. Now, you say it with me. Today, I am one day closer to victory. Now, let's say it with enthusiasm. Today, I am one day closer to victory. Do you believe that? That's the truth. That is the truth.